Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Yet.
No.
You got one more.
Oh, I was already. Oh, I thought I'm gonna turn on. Hey. Who keeps interrupting?
Hello, 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 and welcome to Off the Blocks with Coach Rob Lewis and
Coach Donna Haynesworth.
Welcome to the show. That was our little shout out to Aretha Franklin, rest in peace, our queen of soul.
Yes,
I know you. I know you young people like Beyonce, but the real queen of soul is Aretha Franklin. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, remember.
I was dancing to that earlier today.
Yeah. Well, folks, thank you for watching. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening. Today's show will be about recovery. We told we're going to have a three-part series. Last week, we talked about rest. This week, we're going to talk about recovery. Next week will be regeneration. We're going to cut it short because Coach Donna actually has to leave shortly for a previous engagement she could not get out of, or she would get killed.
I tried to. Good grief.
She would get killed if she didn't. So, but we're going to start off with a little update. We're talking about, I remember I said we're going to talk about rest, recovery, and regeneration, but we're also going to talk about Manu Duplantis at the European Championships. Manu Duplantis has dual citizenship. He is an American citizen and a citizen of Sweden. He's also a high schooler. He just graduated from high school in Louisiana.
Wow.
And the thing about it is he's one of the best pole vaulters in the world, and he's still in, well, he just graduated from high school. You know, he hasn't even gone to college yet, but he's one of the best pole vaulters in the world. Well, again, as a dual citizen, he can compete for America or he can compete for Sweden. He chose to compete for Sweden at the European Championships. Here's the funny thing about it. Competing for European Championship for the country of Sweden, he won.
Oh, wow.
He won. He jumped 6.05 meters or 19.10¾ inches.
Whew.
19 feet. 10 and 3/4 inches, which he won, but also fourth best ever. The fourth best vault ever. He's 18 years old. Another thing, it's past the American record. So he set the under 20 record, he set the American high school record, and he set the American record at the European Championships. Not competing for America. How does that sound?
I feel like we should put him out of the country.
So he literally competed for another country, but set the American record because he has dual citizenship. The funny part about this was brought up at the committee meetings last year. Actually, Jeff Hartwick, one of the committee members, said, "Hey, what if Manu Duplantis goes and competes in the European Championships and breaks the American record? Will it be an American record?" Because of his dual citizenship and the way the rules are written right now, it doesn't say you have to be just an American competing for America. It just says you have to be an American citizen.
Tricky.
You just have to be an American citizen. Because he's dual citizenship, he is considered an American citizen. So, well, anyway, Jeff Hartwood brought this up and said, what if he does it? And the committee said, he's in high school. It's not going to happen. Guess what? Less than a year later,
wow,
it happens. So now.
That is incredible.
Yeah. So what do you say? Manu Duplantis is the American record holder in the pole vault, which is wonderful and outstanding. You know, but when you consider everything, he competed for Sweden.
I was going to say so. So I guess when it's actually listed, like from a world standpoint,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Is he considered American, or is he considered?
And that's the funny thing. In the IAAF, he would be considered Manu Duplantis Sweden, because that's who he competed
okay,
for.
That's what I thought.
However,
okay,
because he's an American citizen, The American record will say Manu Duplantis at the European Championships competing for Sweden. Yes.
Wow.
So he holds the American record.
So technically he's kind of the champion or the record holder for both countries.
Yes. Yes, he actually is.
Okay.
He's a record holder. And I don't know what Sweden's rules are as far as their record setting records, but I would assume he's a record holder. But here in America, he's a record holder.
Yeah.
And again, you got that funny thing, but the even a bigger thing about it is he just got out of high school. He just graduated from high school.
So it's like, how much better do you
get?
Yes,
exactly.
Like, at 18,
exactly.
I mean, like,
he's got the fourth best vault in the world ever. Only two other people. Literally, there's only two other people who jumped higher than him. Two of the greatest of all time, Sergei Bulka and one other. And he's the fourth best. It's amazing. And he has the American record, and he's 18 years old, just graduated from high school. I mean, we'll be hearing about him for the next 10 years. And if he continues with the pole vault, he's also run the 100 before. He's run 10, 6, and 100. He's competed in the 200. He's competed in long jump, triple jump. I mean, he's an all-around athlete. Who knows? He'll probably become a decathlete because who's going to beat him in the pole vault?
I was going to say,
who's going to beat him in the pole vault? And he's got 10-6 speed. So, I mean, you never know. But, I mean, he right now holds the American record. I'm sure they're going to change that rule.
I was going to say, he probably just messed that up for somebody.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to change the rule. But they're not going to go retroactive.
No.
He will be the American record holder until, hopefully, our guy Sam will break the record because he's been trying for it the last couple of years. Maybe he'll break the record for the pole vault for us, and then we'll get, not have this question about it. It's not really a question, but I mean, it is what it is. He's a dual citizen, and he competed for Sweden and won the world championship. So that means won the European championships, which is an amazing thing in itself. Then you say he's 18 years old, which is even more amazing.
Yeah.
And then you add the fact that he set the American record, not competing, wasn't wearing the USA.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It is. Yeah, to that European Championships, you had Dina Ashton-Smith from Great Britain win the 100 and 200 and the 4x1, first woman to do the triple in over 20 years. So congratulations to her. Some other great outstanding performances, but we're not going to really focus on those. I just want to talk about Manu Duplantis because of the funny and the quirky thing about it. He's, again, 18 years old, just graduated from high school in the United States. Competes in the European Championships for Sweden, wins the World Championships as an 18-year-old, and he sets the American record for another country. So just
amazing.
Think about that for a second.
Amazing.
What about what? I don't know what you mean, Chuck. What about icing? I mean, you got to explain that one to me. You get spell check or something got you on that one. I don't know what icing is. Anyway, so we're going to get back to, our topic tonight was, again, last week we talked about rest, recovery, and regeneration. Part one was rest and trying to explain to athletes about rest and coaches and everyone else, parents, a portion about rest. Today, we're going to focus on recovery. Recovery, now, we're going to focus just on one aspect of recovery. Recovery is the portion of the workout where you give the athlete an opportunity to recover from whatever you just did on the track or jumps or whatever the case may be. We're not talking about the recovery that happens after the workout, post-workout, all right, because part of that is recovery, but the majority of that is regeneration, which we'll talk about next week. Coach Turner and I had a long conversation today about recovery and regeneration, and he brought up some interesting stats and research that's been going on and some things we'll talk about, but they were mainly on regeneration. So we'll bring that up next week. But what we're going to talk about today is recovery.
What we touched on it a little bit last week, mm-hmm. and basically, as we said, that recovery period is a portion of from one workout to mm-hmm. the next, a longer period. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about that interval mm-hmm. recovery. So the amount of time that's taken, I guess, from one portion of the workout to the next mm-hmm. part of the workout. It's generally just a matter of minutes.
Yes.
Right? But that matter of minutes kind of makes or breaks the workout.
Yes, it does.
Because it's just as important as the workout itself
mm-hmm.
because it's a, intricate part of the actual workout.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to, no one just runs, jumps, or, or what have you continuously during the entire hour or 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So generally there is an actual regimen or, you know, a workout that's put together for the athlete, which includes that time, that recovery
mm-hmm.
time in between. Let's say you have 500, 400, 300, 200, 100.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your recovery time may be the amount of time that it takes just to get around the track
right.
to the next space.
To the,
so
next,
may,
to the next
may
distance
not be
you're
any
run,
more
yes.
than an,
mm-hmm.
more than a minute.
Right.
May not be any more than 2 minutes.
Right.
But you're going to get more out of the actual workout itself. Obviously, if you take even that 1 to 2 minutes
mm-hmm.
in between those particular portions of the workout.
Right. Right. And mentioning that and saying so, again, when coaches build workouts for their athletes, one of the things they take into account, probably more so than anything, is the recovery time. Because
right.
even though they have a workout set up, the thing that makes the workout go or gives it the best is actually the recovery in which you give the athlete to get better. We don't just say go do 6 800s, you know, and just do 6 800s repeatedly. You know, we don't want that. We want you to do 6 800s with a set amount of recovery in
right.
between each 800. And the reason being your heart rate. We're trying to get either have your heart rate high or lower based on what we're trying to do as far as the workout itself. You know, the heart rate and getting that lung capacity is what's driving it. It's not always necessarily what we're doing on the track. It's what you're doing in between everything you're doing on the track. So if we say we're going to run an 800 at 80% of your speed, your normal speed, and then we're going to give you a recovery of 2 minutes, we want that 2 minutes to be your heart rate still going, your heart rate going up, get into the next one. That's what we're doing. If we say we're going to do that 800 at 80% again, and then we say 4 minutes or more, we're giving you more time to recover, getting your heart rate to come down, you know, so you can have more maximum of doing the next one. We want to keep you, I'll give you an example. We say 6 800s. This is just a hypothetical thing. First 800, we want you to come in, for the guys, you said we want you to come in 2:30, all right? We're going to give you 2 minute recovery, come back at it, get close to it again. Some other times we might say we want you to come in that first 800 at close to 2 minutes, or, you know, around 2 minutes, and we're going to give you more time, say from 2 minutes to 4 minutes or 5 minutes or even longer, because we want you to come back at that same time.
Right.
2 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes for all of them. We may give you, so that may be, there'll be more recovery in between each one of the 800s because we want you to come back hitting that same time. You know, we don't always set up, say, we're going to do 6 800s, hit this time, and then come right back out and hit it again. That's not what your body's going to do. You've got to get your body acclimated to doing those types of things. So that's why coaches build in the recovery period. It's probably more important than the workout itself, because that's what you're based on how they get better.
Right, right. So, again, like you just mentioned, can you imagine if we did not build that recovery portion into the workout?
Yeah.
It is a waste of a workout.
Absolutely.
Essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Because to your point, let's say if you had to run four 800s.
Uh-huh.
So basically you would run at 800, one quick pit stop, run at 800. Like mm-hmm. you're not, if you don't take that time for recovery,
mm-hmm.
you may as well not even do the rest of
it. You're not going to get a good workout.
You're not going to have anything. You're not going to have anything in you.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, each time that you do it, like you said, that recovery contributes to your ability to be able to run at that same
mm-hmm.
level, even if you, you know, a little bit slower because
mm-hmm.
you're getting a little bit more tired,
mm-hmm.
you know, as you go along. But if you don't take that time
mm-hmm.
and you essentially run it,
mm-hmm.
You know, run it just continuously,
mm-hmm.
then you're obviously going to burn out a whole lot
mm-hmm.
faster. And then when it comes time to actually compete, you haven't gained what you needed to gain.
Absolutely.
As far as from a workout
Absolutely.
Standpoint
yes.
to be able to have that. You may have the endurance, but you won't have that speed that's
right.
also needed.
All the things that are contributing to make you a better athlete or better track athlete are not there because you didn't have the proper recovery to go with the workouts in which you set up. The other thing about recovery is it's not just the workout itself, it's who you're working with.
Right.
You know, if you've got, and you've got five athletes who are really, really good, you know, who've been doing this for a while and how to understand and all that stuff, and then you've got five newbies who are just coming to the track, most coaches will not take both of them and say you're going to do the same workout with the same recovery. You don't want to lose the new ones if you're setting up the better athletes within a workout that they're accustomed to. So that same example of doing 6 800s and at a certain time and then coming back with recovery of 2 minutes or more, say 3 minutes, and that five newbies come back, they might get that first one, but they might not get the second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth. They may be so off on the second, third, and their trajectory goes so far down, they get nothing out of it. So you say, okay, then you go the opposite way. Okay, well, then I'm going to say, you know what, instead of giving a three-minute recovery because we got these five new ones and all 10 are working together, in this scenario, all 10 are working together, you know, instead of giving 3 minutes for recovery like the first scenario, I'm going to give 6 minutes or 7 minutes recovery. So the newbies are up to speed. Well, what happens to your older kids, the ones who've been doing it? They get nothing out of the workout. They don't get anything out of it because it's like, well, you know, I'm used to this. I'm not getting anything. I'm just plateaued at the same thing. This is nothing for me. It's a light job for them. So you got to realize who you're working with as well. Your recovery is also based on who you're working with. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure if you have a group of newbies, then you set the recovery properly. Now, what happens if you got that scenario? You got, here's 10 people and you can't split them up. You got to do it. Well, then you have to adjust your recovery based on what the people are doing. So, yes.
And recovery is not just physical.
Absolutely.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is that the biggest portion of it, it appears to be physical,
mm-hmm.
but it's also mental as well, because if mentally you know that you have this recovery period, mm-hmm. then you are also getting your mind right
mm-hmm.
all over again
yep.
to be able to do that
mm-hmm.
next part, you know, that next part of the workout.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just go continuously, obviously you're going to burn out mentally, physically, as well as mentally, because in your mind you already know that you're not going to be able to do this. So
mm-hmm.
once you have in your mind that you can't do this, it's going to talk to your body, which
yep.
is going to physically start breaking down that,
mm-hmm.
ooh, I'm tired, I can't
yep,
do this.
Absolutely.
But if you take that recovery time, which is why that is so essential, then that also gets you together
mm-hmm.
physically as well as mentally
mm-hmm.
to be able to do the next part
mm-hmm.
of the workout.
Tony says you need to have a plan after you cross the finish line as part of your recovery. The plan is always, the coach should always have a plan as to after each set or each portion of one set of what's going to be next. Recovery isn't always just stop and catch your breath. In fact, it's usually better that athletes don't just stop and stand there. It's better for them actually to walk or jog.
Right, right.
For recovery. To keep the heart rate still going, to keep it up, pumping the blood, getting the oxygen going through. The standing still basically shuts everything down, and then you got to start it all up again. So it's either, like I say, okay, we're doing this set. Don't stop, walk, you know, jog. You'll see so many, if you look at most track workouts, you'll see 10 by 10 by 10, 30-second walk recovery. 10 by 10 by 10, 30-second jog recovery, jog back to line, walk back to line, keeping the athletes moving. Never do you, I mean, 9 times out of 10, you don't see stand still, catch your breath.
Right.
You catch your breath by the walking or the jogging. And it's, again, it's a light jog. It's not a hard jog. Sometimes the coaches will ask for a harder jog, a little more pace to it. But most of the time, it's a light jog or walking to keep the heart rate going, to keep everything going, pumping the oxygen, getting the blood going, and breaking down the lactate, and less chance that lactate builds up in that sense. So
right.
you'll see that as well. Most of the time, you'll see coaches say, don't stand still, keep moving. The kids get mad at me because I'm yelling at them, keep moving. You know, don't stand still. Keep. Oh Lord,
I know that was you just going to say that. I was going to say thank you. He said, "This is why I've been over here fooling with my phone." Thank you, Tony.
Can I get back to the show, Tony?
Yes.
Can I get
yes,
back
yes.
to the show, Tony? I don't hear you mentioning nothing about the Eagles, which is supposed to be your favorite team, but
no,
that's how
Redskins
it goes. All right, man.
Redskins is his team.
Okay, Redskins is his team. All
yeah,
right, I'll see you next week.
Redskins are playing right now.
I'll see you next week. We'll talk about our skins. Lord have mercy. But recovery, like we said, recovery most of the time is, again, it's walking or jogging, so we can build the lactate, doesn't build up, or we get it reduced faster in that sense in doing it for the athlete.
So, and as you mentioned, as the athlete actually stops their race, part of the reason, part of the recovery,
wait,
too.
Wait, stop.
What do you say? I have no question. I know. It's hard for me to focus, too. Like, I'm trying to keep hope alive. I'm trying to stay focused here, stay in the moment.
You're a track coach.
Of recovery.
You're a track coach.
I know, but I'm a football fan, too. Thursday is, it's tough at 8 o'clock on Thursday. What do you think the chances are we can move maybe to a Wednesday night? Anyway. Let's stay focused here. Let's stay focused.
Kev, are you watching this? You'll watch it later.
Thanks for
you
the
heard
update,
that.
Tony. Yeah, I mean, that's a real thought. I just thought about that. Because Thursday's going to be challenging during football season. I don't think we're
going to play every Thursday?
No, but I'm a football fan. My skins play on Thursday sometimes. But I also just like to watch football.
It's going to be 4-12. Who cares?
No, we're not. We're keeping
recovery.
Recovery.
She needs to recover from being a Skins fan,
anyway,
too. But
anyway, back to the thank you, Tony. So somebody's got my back here. Somebody's got my back. So what I was saying or attempting to say before I sidetracked my own self
is that
part of the recovery is not just like we said it's physical, we said it's mental, but it's also a time to get your breathing together. So as and that's that part that we just talked about, like right there at the end that was right there at the end of the race where we say don't stop, right? Because a lot of times we're telling you, put your hands on top of your head so you can, you know, keep your lungs open. Do this, you know, keep walking. You don't necessarily have to keep at a fast pace, but you want to keep it because your muscles have been contracting so quickly and, you know, and everything. It's a whole lot that goes into just that race, whether it's a long distance race or whether it's a short distance race. The bottom line is that rapid pace of breathing that, you know, that's going on or that happens after your race. And then also, with...
I obviously have no say in this, but go on.
I don't have any say either. But I do think that it is important for you to be able to, you know, catch your breath, get yourself together. Again, it still comes down to the physical and mental aspect of it. But one of the things is definitely making sure that that comes along, that plays into the whole workout itself, is like the whole hydration.
Rusty!
Hey, Rusty!
How's it going?
that hydration that comes into it, the proper breathing, you know, the proper rest, and all of that is also a part of the recovery.
Right.
Piece.
Absolutely. So I didn't talk about the recovery. Like I said, we're talking about recovery this evening. We mentioned that, you know, we both advocate, you know, not standing still, but moving after we finish that set or that part of the race that run that you've got to go on. The other thing we talk about is the athlete you have there and how you set the recovery, whether you have new athletes or not as experienced athletes to athletes who are fine-tuning and all stuff. The other part of recovery and putting in your workouts is the time of the season.
Right.
You know, when you have preseason conditioning, the recovery might be a little bit longer to get them right going. Why, as you get into the season, getting closer to race time and you get them, you know, ready the season, you'll have less recovery because you don't need it so much. It's more now getting them ready for racing and having that lactate build up and bypassing it, getting better. So in season, you know, at the beginning of season, you may set your workout to have more recovery to get them acclimated. And then as the season progresses, you might have the same workout at the beginning of the season, mid-season, and at the end of the season, where they're supposed to be at their peak, but if you don't stop,
yeah, I just got. Thanks, Tony.
Beginning season, middle season, and the end of the season, you might have the same workout, but the recovery might be different. And the athletes, will also have, they'll see the same workout, but still feel like they've gotten a difficult workout, even though they're like, at the beginning of the season, we were doing 10 200s at this time and got this much recovery. Middle season, 10 200s with this amount of recovery, less recovery. And at the end of the season, 10 200s with very little recovery. Mm-hmm. And same thing. And they're still at the end of the race going, oh man, God, that was a tough workout. It's the same workout. It's the exact same workout they had through the whole year, but you change it based on their level of fitness and where you are in the season.
Right.
You'll change recovery based on where you're in the season. Your recovery might be longer, closer to a race.
Right.
Pre-race, you might have longer recovery. Now, your workouts will be different as well. You might change it to tempo runs or things where you're just getting them, in the right frame of mind. Like you mentioned, the recovery might be, okay, here's what we're doing, but most of the recovery time is mental time, mental focus, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have a race tomorrow. I need you to do this. This is the first part of workout. You do the workout, then you're talking to them about the mental aspect of the race, how I want you to run the race. So we're going to do pieces of the race, stop, recovery of thinking about it, what we're going to do, then go to the next piece. You know, all these other things that come into play.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to, I know that we talk about, we kind of interject that whole mental aspect to almost every conversation that we have because it's so essential in the recovery, in the actual workout itself, and all of that. We talk about mental toughness and, and all of that, but it is, it's also part of recovery as well, because you already know, this is why a lot of times we like to give the workout itself up front.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're doing today. This, and that,
right? Mm-hmm.
Because it not only prepares you, you not only have to be physically prepared for it, but then that mental part of it again helps you to rebuild yourself to get ready for that next part of it.
Absolutely.
You know, and then I've just mentioned like that hydration piece of it a little bit. We don't want you drinking a whole bunch of water between either.
No. Mm-hmm.
However, when kids ask, we do build in just a short water break as part of the recovery as well. And when kids say, "Can I get a sip of water real quick?" Based on the athlete, because not everybody needs, most of them, quite honestly, should not need three different water breaks.
Right. And like you mentioned, we build in hydration recovery in there as well. Usually we go about 20 minutes and then it's a hydration recovery time. So we set the workout to basically at about 20 minutes. It may be a couple minutes earlier, it might be a couple minutes later, but reset it to the workout to go. So at that time, that's hydration recovery. It'll be a little bit longer, but you get your water. But even when we get the water, we don't want you just getting in the water and standing still or doing something like that. We want you to get your water, get it in, get it out, get back over, get your body going, and get moving. All right. It's not a long period of time of 10 minutes or something. We don't do that because now you basically have to start all over again from where you are. So we build hydration recovery in there as well, but based on the time, it's usually about 20 minutes, for the most part, and then we get moving on as far as the recoveries are concerned, and back to the workout.
Right, and we touched on it a bit too, the difference between kind of active recovery versus kind of just standing still. We do not, I don't think anyone for that matter, suggest that standing still is the best type of recovery. It's actually best to keep on moving. Like you said, we're not necessarily asking you to run to the next spot and to get ready or anything like that. But once you stop, once you cross the finish line, rather, we still don't want you to even really stop at that point. We still want you to keep on walking around the track, to get to the next spot or whatever. Or even if you're just waiting for the next group to come in, it's just best just, put your hands on top of your head and just kind of pace a little bit and keep on going, because it's easier, really, if you slow yourself down during that recovery period, but don't really stop, because your muscles are going
to
keep on, keep on moving.
Yes, absolutely.
And you'll be better off as you take off for that next set of the workout because your muscles didn't get a chance to just sit there, and especially if it's cold outside, didn't get a chance to just sit there, and then, you risk injury and everything
right.
by not continuing to keep
right.
your muscles moving.
Right. Like the athletes know my fence rule. What's my fence rule? Don't sit on the fence. Don't touch the fence. Yeah, don't touch the fence. Don't sit on the fence. And when we have practice, it's like, don't touch the fence. Don't sit on the fence. And they all go, man, why can't we just touch the fence? Because you're leaning on the fence and you're standing still.
Right.
That's why I say it. Don't touch the fence. Get away from the fence. Because if you go to the fence, you're going to lean over and be still. And you're not going to be moving. Don't touch the fence. Get away from the fence. What's my
right.
fence rule? And they go, oh, Lord. They get up, walk away, and they start moving. That's why we do it. We don't want you sitting on the fence being standing still, you know, whether it be hot or cold. We don't want you. We want you moving so we can clear that lactic out of there and get you going because we got the other sets to go. You get sit on that fence, we start you over, everything's going to go down. We're not going to get the workout that we want to get done. You know, we don't just make it up. You know, we're looking to hit certain times or distances the way we set it up. And part of that doing it is the recovery time. We're looking at saying, okay, you know, that first set, they did it in a 461 seconds, all right? We're looking for you to hit certain times. I want a 61, 63, 63, 63, 63, and then come back to a 61. I'm looking to do that. I'm building my recovery in there for you to do that. I don't want a 61 the first time, a 57 the second time, then 68, 68, 68, 70. I didn't get what I wanted. And you're not going to get anything out of it as an athlete. You're not going to get anything out of it as well. So, you know, Lord have mercy.
What?
You know what?
Uh-oh.
I'm on.
I told you, see, Thursday is about to get challenging here. Okay, I'm not even going to look at my phone, but thank
you. That's all right. You don't have
right
to. Because your fans here, your other skin fan in here, keeping his eye on field goals. But anyway,
yeah,
won't say anything about, you know, my team and what I thought was his team. Nothing. But, you know, that's all right. It's fine. It's just fine. All right? You going to keep posting it once she has to leave? You going
to
keep giving me the score?
He was sending it to
me. Oh, whatever.
Thanks for, you know, enlightening the rest
okay.
of the
all
fans,
right.
too.
Having said that, all right. So we talked about hydration recovery. We talked about the athletes themselves. We talked about points in the season where we build recovery in. If you have any questions, just give us a call at 646-668-8083. Most of our fans truly just like to watch and listen to us talk and going on. And because we're kind of a specialty sport, the questions really don't come that often
sure.
because we're more informing you about track and field, not so much opinionated about, you know, is MJ better than LeBron or what do you think about baseball? Whatever. Okay, ours is more of a niche sport, and we're trying to getting you, enlighten you, and educate you about what we do and why we do it.
Right.
So, and we understand why we don't get that many calls when it comes to that concern because, again, we're more educating than just talking and giving an opinion. So we're fine with you not calling. We love you watching, though. We truly enjoy having you watching. Because not many people would want to sit here for 90 minutes to talk about track and field. And then there's not many people who would sit there for 90 minutes and watch us talk about track and field.
Sure.
Even though Tony tries to get us to talk about his skins. Yeah, Eric, thank you. I appreciate that, Eric. You are soaking up there. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. But, I mean, like I said, we are track and field people. We love our sport. We enjoy the other sports as well. We enjoy football. We enjoy basketball. And the other one, we had kids who played all those sports.
Mm-hmm.
But our love, our passion is track and field, and we enjoy it. And like I said, we'd like to educate you more so than talk about it so you understand when we say, man, we did this workout and we had them do this and they didn't hit the times and all that stuff. Well, why are you mad at them, coach? You gave them a workout with, you know, 10 200s. Man, that's tough. And when we say, well, because we set this recovery and they didn't hit the times. Yes, I know, Tony. Thank you. Thank you for helping me understand that. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Tony, by the way, you know, you didn't ask Donna who you should pick in your fantasy draft. He drafts number 5 in the Fantasy Football League next weekend.
Oh, okay.
Do you have any idea who he should pick? Any idea since he's on here talking about football? Anybody? Fantasy football? Why don't you study up on that and give him an idea next week? He's number 5, so tell him who he should draft.
Got it. Oh,
give her some help, Tony. Tell her, give her some idea of what you want. But anyway, back to recovery. Like you said, we talked a little bit about the workout itself. We talked about the athletes. We talked about in the season, and we talked about the hydration and why we ask you to move. So now we're going to delve a little bit more, even though I think.
I'll give it a few more.
So then I'm going to lose Tony, but that's all right. Anyway.
So one of the things we talked with the, y'all are crazy.
Yeah, I know.
With this whole recovery part, right?
Mm-hmm.
Part of it, what we talk about too, and we say this not just with recovery, but just in general with a lot of the workout itself, is the quality over quantity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much.
Hold on a second. I just want to answer that for you in a second.
That you need to have, that you need to build in 10 different, you know, points of recovery and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, what are you doing and how are you conducting that recovery portion of the workout itself?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are, like you said, if you're just standing over there on the fence, you know, that's not, it's kind of a recovery, but it's really not a productive recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to look at the quality of the recovery itself and just kind of what you're doing during the course of that recovery. Mm-hmm. Are you walking and continuing to move? Are you just, are you not tired? So you just, you know, just standing there running your mouth, wasting time basically during the time in between that you should be recovering. The most, like I said, I feel like the most productive way to recover is just to kind of keep moving, not even a jog or anything like that. You could just walk and just, but just keep some sort of pace, keep steady breathing, you know, and so forth. And just stay focused. Mm-hmm. Stay focused on the next task at hand and take it one at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things about standing still, and just a second, Tony, one of the things about standing still is your body, here's the thing about standing still, may believe you've gone to the point where you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You've done, you completed everything, and what will your body do? It will start the next phase, and what we talk about next week is regeneration. Mm-hmm. All right, let me start getting your body built to what just happened to you. Let me start fixing or getting adjusting to what you just did to your body as far as what your muscles did and the oxygen was taken in or how we use the blood. Let me fix those things or adjust those things so you can go on to do whatever he's doing next. So when you're standing still, your body automatically does this. It's not something that you have to tell it. And that's the amazing thing about your body. Your body will say, it will believe you've stopped what you're doing.
Right.
You're not going to do this anymore. And now I need to regenerate what's happened to you to fix it, to get you more acclimated to what you're doing, to get your muscles building. For example, when a bodybuilder goes out and lifts, and he lifts all mass amount of weight, and he comes back, his body says, I need to adjust it. So he's got to build. So the body says, I got to adjust it to bring more on here and give more fibers, get more fibers to get it going, to adjust what's going on. It's regenerating what it needs to do to be acclimated to what you put your body through.
Right.
So when you stop what you're doing and stand still, your body thinks it's time to regenerate. Let me do this. So that's why I want you to keep moving so your body doesn't start that period too early.
Right.
You don't want it to start while you're still in the midst of your workout or you mess up everything that's going on. So those are some of the things we're talking about, and that's what we're doing. Coach Turner, I'm so glad to see you on here because you can help me get through this next hour because she's got to go. She's got to see the previous game she's got to get to or she's going to get killed, and I don't want to be the blame for it.
And it's by your friend, Kimberly.
Okay, so and I don't want to get killed like it's my fault. So.
I tried to get out of it. She's like, you're gone.
All right, so,
and you know how bossy she is. So
you know. So
I'm out of
I ain't
here.
Trying to be the one in there. But as in saying that, what I was saying is
I'm going
to slide. Okay.
Yes.
So just wave, say bye to Tony before he loses his mind.
Bye.
Say bye to Tony.
Oh, bye, Tony.
Thank you.
Bye, Coach Turner.
Okay. I'll see you next week. But in mentioning what we're saying is in the recovery and like she said, moving and keeping moving is part of the recovery. The other parts of recovery isn't necessarily the walking and stuff. You can do recovery while you're still there. Now, I'm not standing still. We may say, hey, do chairs. Hey, grab your foam roller and roll things out. Do some stretching and all stuff. That's part of recovery as well. You're actively involved. You're actively doing something, but you're not having your body. Come on, coach. Really? You're going to do that to me too? Like, I'm just here. I mean, I'm the beauty. She's just here. But anyway, you're actively moving and actively doing something. It keeps the body going. So when we have you, so we'll say, let's stretch this out. Let's do chairs. Let's do a couple of these things on this going on. Then we'll do those things and get it moving as well. Let me go back to your first question, Tony. You asked about sweat rate. Now, from my youth and high school, rarely do they know their sweat rate. And the reason being is they don't understand the sodium intake they've taken in, how it comes out of their bodies, what their bodies, their physiology of their body. And because they don't eat right, most of them, they don't prepare their bodies properly, their sweat will change. I'm glad you're still here, man. At least I got my man here who understands what I'm talking about. And, you know, he didn't even talk about, well, I don't know. Don't talk about the skins, please. But anyway, like I was saying, Tony, high school athletes, more than because of their nutrition and those things of that nature, they may change their sweat and they'll understand it. Other thing is, you know, sometimes we don't understand. Female athletes and the sweat rate changes as well based on their menstruation. So, and once you're a high condition athlete, those things change again. So, as for when you, in answering your question, as a high school athlete, they're probably not going to know, and we'll tell them and we'll understand, we'll give them understanding. But once they get to college, there should be somebody who helps them understand sweat rate, their nutrition, and physiological makeup of their bodies, and how do you adjust to what you're doing and what the workout is from what we're doing from a climate, from the workout itself, and what you've taken in your body. So those things are all important, like you mentioned, the sweat rate. Now, you asked, does a triple jumper have a different recovery program than a 200 runner? Depends on what the triple jumper is doing as compared to the 200 runner. Again, the triple jumper may have a track workout that day and do the track workout. It doesn't change because they're a triple jumper. They're doing the track workout. But their recovery and doing their drills and what they're doing a triple jump may have a different set of recovery and how they go about recovery than as compared to, I'm going to put you in the track and you're going to do 6 200s today. As of it, we're going to do these drills for triple jump. We're going to do some run throughs or whatever case, maybe pop up drills, and how we do the recovery in that sense may be different. Coach Stern can talk more to it about that than I can because he's a triple jumper, so, and he's one of the best, and he's the state record holder in the triple jump for high school, so he can tell you more so than I can. But from on the track, it would be here's the recovery going on from here. From a hurdler, and when we do hurdle practice, there is somewhat of a different recovery. I have a different recovery than when I say we're going to do just sprint work on the track. Hurdles may be doing, I may have them doing, we're going to do, you know, 430s over hurdles. 430s over the hurdles. What we do, then recovery may be, okay, I want you to walk through just using your trail aid, walking over just using your track, snapping your trail aid. That may be my recovery for them and doing that. Or just work your lead leg. Then I'll come back and say, I want you to jog too. And something that may be the recovery I would do from a hurdler standpoint, asking what a coach would do for triple jumping or just on the track. So to answer your questions, there's recovery aspects in those things. Moving forward, like I said, we started off, we just said what recovery is, and we're talking about the workout itself, Coach Turner. I mean, you and I talk about regeneration a lot, but I want to talk about the workout itself. Preseason recovery to mid-season recovery to late-season recovery. Preseason recovery. Our high school is about to start preseason conditioning August 27th. Again, we mentioned last week that Coach Don and I will not be there that early. We're going to come a bit later. But preseason begins for a lot of the athletes August 27th. Their recovery, their workouts will consist of some certain things. I can't say it all because, you know, I can't tell you everything. But some of it will be they'll be doing hills, which they're going to do run the hills. There'll be absolutely nothing on the track. Well, at least shouldn't be anything on track. Very, very little on track. It'd be grass work, hill work, road work, things of that nature, weights, things, because this is preseason. You don't really need to be on the track during preseason. You're just trying to get them ready for when you do get to the track. And you want to save their legs. You don't want their legs to build shin splints or develop ankle problems or hip problems, knee problems, because they're on the track so early when your season pretty much goes from, if you start in August, you're trying to get into mid-June, which is New Balance Nationals. So you've got to base it on how long your season is going to be. That's a 9 to 10 month season. So preseason is basically going to be, okay, let's get in the hills, let's get in the weight room, let's do some of these things, drills and that nature, to get them ready before we get to the other thing. So here's the recovery. You're doing hills. Now, when we do hills, when I do hills, I kill them. You know, we're going to do this X amount of hills based on the hills we have. I will take your answer, but the question was not for you.
Okay.
All right. Get off the show then, Tony. She ain't here no more. Leave. Go watch your skids. But Coach Turner can answer for you as well, because like I said, he was a triple jump champion and he knows his stuff. And he knows a lot more about triple jump than I can ever tell you. And I'm not going to even fake the funk. You know, I know what I don't know. And I don't know triple jump. But Coach Turner can tell you, and of course Donna can tell you. But to answer your question, I try to help you a little bit, but you're going to have that kind of stuff. And just, I swear, next week, boy, we and I are going to go at it. But having what I was talking about, preseason recovery is going to be different. So when they're doing hills, they're going to do these hills, and recovery is going to be set based on the athletes we have out there, where they are in their fitness level, and how you want to train them going forward. So what, based on what the program is going to be, is how we're going to set the recovery for that time. In addition, recovery in the weight room is different than recovery on the hills, because in the weight room, you're saying, here we're going to do sets of, with this weight, at this amount, this many sets, based on who we have, and we're going to have some type of recovery. You've got to have recovery in there as well. We don't just go into the weight room and say, okay, I want you to do 10 sets of, you know, bench presses at a 45 pound on each side, you know, do three sets of 10, and then you're done. We actually have a time frame in between the three sets of 10. So the first set of 10, then you put recovery there. Second set of 10, you put another recovery third set. Coach Turner reported recovery is largely driven by energy system recovery times are typically standard. What you're doing during recovery may differ. So if I'm doing lactate threshold training, it's going to be 8 minutes or more, things of that nature. What he's saying, basically what the training is set up, what your setup is, what your workout is going to be, is based on what you're trying to do from the energy recovery system, the energy of your body builds to get it going. So that's when we set the recoveries. Those things are all we talked about and those things. And I don't want to get so technical that people just, it goes over people's heads. But from a coaching standpoint, this is the things that we get into and we look at and we understand what we have based on the athletes we have and how we want to build it going forward. And from a high school standpoint, or even go back even further, because remember, I do both high school and I do youth. So youth is 5 years old to 18 years old. So when I have the 5-year-olds to 12-year-olds, it's a little bit different. And then a funny part about those athletes is their energy system is nothing but energy. They have tons and tons of energy. So you would think if I have a 5-year-old and I say, I want you to do 6 800s, it's not going to be as fast as a 15-year-old. But the recovery, they'll come back and be, I'm ready to go faster than the older kids, because just based on the energy levels they have and how it's built in their system and all the things. And the funny part about it is sometimes it's nutrition. Younger kids might eat better than the older kids. It helps them as well. It helps a lot of them. So we have those things going on as well. But like I said, from a youth standpoint, when I'm talking about my youth kids as compared to my high school kids or my well-conditioned or my college athletes, because I have college athletes as well, everything is a little bit different. It's based a lot on who I have, where they are in level, and what I'm trying to do in training. What is my goal, my optimal goal for them, and what part of the season they're in. That's what we've been talking about. Recovery. Going back to beginning of the season, like I said, beginning of season, preseason, we're at the hills, we're in the weight room, we set the recovery levels. Now you get into midseason and you started, okay, now we're on the time where we're getting to the track. We're getting to the track and we're ready to go. So we set workouts. We look at the workouts, look at the athletes we have. We set our recovery time based on what we're going to do for those workouts and the athletes we have and how we're going to get them ready, and what they're going to do. So sprinters may have one workout. Distance people may have another workout. Middle distance may have another workout. We might even break it down even more so, depending on what we think. If we have a specialty hurdler or hurdlers, and they do sprints as well, they may do the sprint workout, but we may tailor it more so towards their hurdle work because they need a little bit of aspect. If they're a long hurdler, 400 hurdler, so I might tailor it more towards a middle distance, more long sprint middle distance as compared to a short sprinter if they're a 110 person or a 100 hurdler. Now, the athletes I have, most of them do dual. They'll do 100 and 400 or 100 and 300. So I break down the athletes and I break down their workouts based on short sprints this time, longer endurance sprints for the other ones, on what they're doing from a hurdler standpoint. Jumpers do some of the same things. High jumpers do something a little bit different if they're just a specialty athlete. And we even have those in high school where their kids are basically specialty athletes. It's not something that I really like. Okay, coach, you're saying triple jump is no different. I have speed endurance days with bounding as well, but tailored to skill level. Everybody who triple jump can't necessarily handle an intense bounding routine. Basically, you're tailoring your workout to what you have, what the athletes are going to do. So you look at it and you build your recovery and your workout based on the level of the athlete that's doing. So if you got a pretty good triple jumper who is well-tuned and understands what it takes and has been there and knows the program, the bounding techniques and the bounding part of your workout will be a little bit more difficult than some of the other ones. Is running bad after lifting? Is running bad after lifting? Now, see, you're talking about, you're adding something here that's not recovery. You're saying, is running bad after lifting? I'm saying what we do from our standpoint is we do a portion of where the running is actually first. We do the running first, and then we do weight room, all right? And then we do stretching, and we do some slow jogs and stuff as part of the cool down period to get the muscles flexible. But the biggest thing is what we do after weightlifting and after that stuff is stretching. Like we said, we do stretching, foam rubber, yoga. Some of the things we do after the workout and from the beginning of the workout and the weight room, because we want to get that flexibility. Weights is building things up and strengthen the muscles, but you also want to elongate muscles and stretch them out. And the best way to do that is afterwards, a little bit of light jogging, some of those nature, and stretching. And like we said, yoga, we like to get them loose and flexible. That's what we work on. A lot of athletes, especially on the track, we have this issue where they're not flexible and it really hurts them. Their hips are so tight that they can't hurdle as well as they can, or they can't triple jump or high jump because their hips are tight. We've got to get them flexible. We've got to get them more flexible. Their backs are not flexible. Here's the funny part that some people miss. Shoulders. You literally think, what's the shoulders have to do with running? Or I say, well, it has a lot to do with it. If you can't drive with your arms, we always talk about arms and legs working together. And if your arms and your shoulders are so tight that you can't move them and focus and relax them to do, it's not beneficial to your athlete. So we learn, work on things and loosen the shoulders. Just little drills, things like this and going back and forth. Stretch them out. All those things are just to stretch the arms out. Put them up above your head. Stretching your shoulders out and loosening them up to keep the flexibility in the shoulders, in the hips, in the knees, in the ankles. Those are all parts of afterwards, after a workout. And we call it part of recovery because we're still doing active movement. Like I said, when I mentioned earlier, once you end the workout, in other words, you tell your body we're done, your body immediately goes into the regeneration period and starts working on recovering or adjusting to what you've done to it this previous time and getting better for the next time you do it. So it has that, as we talked about last week, memory, body, mind, muscles, nerves. Remember, this is what we did. This is how we adjust to it. This is how I fix it. So I am better acclimated to doing these types of things. So that's why we don't want you to just stop. And even when our practice is over, we don't want it to be stop, move. We want, okay, here's the end of the workout. Here's the thing. Now move a little bit. Stretch out a little bit while you're waiting for your ride. Don't just stand still. Keep moving. You know, when you're talking, move around as you're standing around there. Walk around in the area. Lift your knees. You know, stretch out a little bit. All those things to keep moving, keep going as we go forward for the recovery. That's all part of it. So that's what we do. I mean, that's what we're talking about. Hold on 1 second. So that's the preseason. Now we're in the midseason. We still have weight training. We still at some point have hills. We're still going to, but we're now getting closer to starting the season. Into the season. We're in the season. So now we changed some of the workouts to be more intense. We probably shortened the recovery. So if we had a workout, again, just an example, this isn't a true workout, but example, we said 6 200s, in the early season, 6 200s with 4 minutes rest. We might change it. Tony, he's giving you knowledge, man. If you want knowledge, he can give it to you. He mentions that there's actually studies incorporating lifting a track. And, you know, Coach, it's funny. I've tried to bring that in. Again, I bring the jump rope into the track. I bring the boxes onto the track for power matches. I bring those things to the track. I've been teaching. I told Coach Jones about bringing their hurdles. I'm not the hurdles, the barbells on the track to work, you know, five-pound barbells or 10-pound barbells. Doing your lunges with the barbells and power and stuff, so you're actually doing that as part of your track workout. So there are people who do it. I'm an advocate of doing that, but I prefer, and for me, honestly, I want to make sure people know what they're doing and you're able to watch what they're watch the athletes so they're not doing it improperly. One of the biggest things you got to teach people, especially when you bring barbells out and stuff, is how you use them. Even when they're weight room. Kids just think they just put their bar in their hands and lift. Well, no, you want to place it in properly. Where you place it in your hand is properly. Where your hands are placed on the bar is proper. What muscles you're trying to work. So I'm an advocate. Like, if I bring it out, I want to be hands-on and be able to watch everything they're doing. And sometimes because of what we're doing in track, it's difficult to keep an eye on everything going on. But I'm an advocate like you of bringing the bells onto the track. I definitely barbells being on the track. I bring a lot of other things on the track, but I like to bring the barbells. I like to bring barbells out to do and use them on the track because there are some really good drills and really good things you could do with barbells on the track at the same time. Excuse me, as I was mentioning, we're in midseason. So now we've got them. So now you've got your kids. Like I said, we're using that 6 by 6 200s. Now you get your kids, got them in some pretty good shape, and now you said, okay, based on this, now I'm going to reduce the recovery time because your body should be acclimated. So early season was 5 minutes. I'm down in 3 minutes or less, get them going. But I've also increased the intensity of the 200. So I may have had your earliest season doing it at 60% of your maximum speed. Now I might bring it up to 80% of your maximum speed but cut your recovery time down. Might do that. Sometimes I might actually go the opposite. I might tell you to max out your recovery, your speed, and give you more recovery because I want you to come back at that maximum volume. Rarely, if as a matter of fact, I'll tell you, never do I want some kids to run at full speed. So Eric, you used the drill about the barbells, yes. How did it help? Did it help Kobe? Did you have Adonis do it as well? Let me know if you have Adonis do it as well. So I never asked an athlete to go full speed, 100%, you know, doing his workout. I really, the maximum I usually say is 90%, 90% of your maximum speed. And that's what I'm looking at in practice, 90% of your maximum speed and doing this workout. So I can see, and I'll give you more recovery because I want you to come back at it. So I might have extended ones trying to get you to come back at that time. I want you to do 6 200s, say for a guy, 6 200s, 24 seconds. I want you to come back, and here's your recovery. I'll give you more recovery because I want you to come back at it. First one's done. Walk back. You know, you got this time frame to walk back to the 200 to do the next one and go on and on and go on. Come trying to get you to hit that 24, 24, 24, and see as close as you can to get to it. So I might do that. That's something I do in midseason. Don't do that early. Oh, you had the whole team go. That's awesome. Okay, pretty good. Did you think it helped them? Did it help them doing on? Because, again, Coach Turner and I are talking about bringing the barbells out to the track. How did that work for your team, Eric? Let me know how that did for your team. So, like I said, so what I want to maximize, this is more midseason, getting better into the season, that type of workout. Early season, I'm not doing that. I'm basically trying to see fitness level and energy capacity and everything that's going on and getting it to that point, and then we go forward. Now, I talked a lot about the shorter guys, sprinters and things like that. But I also want to talk to you about long distance because, again, track and field is not just 100, 200, 400. You know, middle distance, you have 800, 1,500. But you have long distance like 2 miles, some say 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 marathons and other workouts, same thing. helped a whole lot. Great. I'm glad it did. I'm glad I was able to help you guys. I appreciate that. I like to know that those things helped out. Long distance also has, again, they have track arcs, but they have their long distance and their road work, and they also have recovery times based on what they do. They don't just go and run 20 miles or you say, I'm going on a long run, and then that's it. They actually do it with, you know, at pacing and recovery. They include recovery in there as well. So you may not think a long distance or a distance runner comes out and they say, okay, they got workouts on the track and they're doing 1200s at this pace. And I was like, well, they build in recovery as well. They make sure they do it. Sometimes it'll be short rest. Sometimes it'll be maximize it. Sometimes, like I said, now it's one of the things they said, longer rest, and this is something I talked about before, longer rest and workouts consist of very long intervals or very demanding intervals. So longer rest periods when training, when used for training short rest, are most beneficial so you can run a repetition almost flat out, then recover fully before you begin the remainder of the workout. In other words, what I just talked about. So you're doing, I'd say 6 200s. I want you to do that first 200 at 90%, right? I'm going to give you a longer recovery so you can come back and do it again. That's for what that's talking about from that standpoint. And it says the more taxing the interval or the faster it is, the more recovery is called for. So the more difficult I'm working you, the harder I get you to work at the maximum velocity, what I'm saying, 80% or 90%, I usually give you more recovery so you can come back and do it over and over and over again. If I'm doing shorter, so I, like I said, those 6200s at 60%, I'm shortening it. 60% with, 2 minute recovery, because I want you to come back. I'm working on the endurance portion of it. That's the endurance portion of it, as working to the speed portion of it. That's what I'm talking about in midseason. Now, here you go. You're at end of season. You're at championship level. You're getting going. What is your recovery? What are you doing recovery wise and all that stuff? Here's the funny part. It's usually longer. I'm usually giving them longer recovery. Reason being, in track workouts, not always as difficult. Reason being, they're at their peak fitness level. It's not so much that they need to get more and better fitness. It's their endurance. It's their energy. It's their body acclimated to what they need to do. So there might be more of those, okay, here we go. Let's max it out, long recovery. Max out, long recovery. Those things. But it won't be as many. So if I had 6200s at one point or 6200 there, I may say we're going to do 3 or 4 at the point, depending on the athlete. If there's an athlete who really hasn't gotten all the way there, they may still do 6. Do you write down the workouts and recovery time for your workout for the season? Yes. That is, as a coach, I do it for most of my athletes based on who the athlete is. When I start the year, and this is the funny part, I don't bring them out to the track, because the funny part I've found is when I bring them out to the track, they always seem to disappear. And Eric, you know as well as I did. I remember we came out, we were doing a practice one time, this cracks me up. We're doing a practice, and there was another team in the area who came out to practice at the same time we did. Normally it doesn't happen, but they came to a practice, and they watched me do a practice. And they watched the practice I did. I told the athletes what the practice was going to be, and I told them what the recovery was going to be, and they watched it. The funny part is they came back out the very next day and did the exact same workout, which I don't have a problem with, imitation is a serious form of flattery. If you're going to imitate me, give us credit for what we're doing. But what they did, they followed us to another track and did the exact same thing. I was like, you know what? If you want a program, then come ask me. I'll tell you. Don't just watch what I'm doing so you can do it. Learn what you're doing. But so I stopped bringing them out there with me. I usually have the workouts. I'll leave the workout in the car because I set up what I'm going to do. And then once I finish it, I have my watch. I keep my times in my watch, and I'll know it and then write it down and say, okay, they hit this one, they hit this one, they didn't hit this one. And I'll base it on track and say, okay, what I need to do. So, you remember that? Yeah. But what your question was, yeah, I do keep an idea of where they are and, what they did preseason, midseason, postseason, and that's how I adjust it. And again, it depends on the athletes. Since I've gotten to the high school level, I've had to tweak it a little bit because the athlete, the talent of the athlete is usually not as it's what's the right word I want to use? The difference in talent can be extraordinary. I may have three monsters, two really good ones, two good ones, six average, five fair. You know, never no athlete's ever poor, but fair. And so I will look at these and then say, okay, from the fair athletes, this is what I'm looking for. From the average athletes, this is what I'm looking for. From the above average, I'm looking for. And from the exceptional athletes, this is what I'm looking for. And I'll look at that so I can get the fair from fair to the highest level they can reach. Sometimes they can't reach it higher than fair, you know, based on their level, their skill level, their attitude, and what they want to put into doing it. You know, sometimes a fair athlete wants to be a fair athlete. It's just, you know, you're okay, and that's all you want to do. You were talking to Alan Webb. Coach Turner says he was talking to Alan Webb, but he had workout logs dating back to his high school time, recorded times, recovery, and amount of sleep the night before. 20 years of logs. So this athlete, Alan Webb, one of the best middle distance distance runners we have, to me, is middle distance because he ran there 8 and 1500, but he does run up higher than that, but 8 and 1500. Oh, that's what you're doing? Well, thanks, Coach Turner, just for re-emphasizing that. Oh, no problem, Eric. Yeah, do so. Keep it definitely for Adonis and some of the other kids. But, yeah, the logs they keep on and what they do. I mean, coaches, I have you know, what I've written down for athletes and where they're going. I could probably still find the ones I used to have for Sydney and China and Leela. And I used to write it down. People didn't realize it. I'd write it down. Sydney did this today. China did this today. India did this today. This is what we're going on. This is where I'm going. The one thing that I didn't stress so much, but I wish I had, but I've been doing it more so, is that sleep log portion, like you mentioned, Coach Turner, because I knew how important sleep was, but I wasn't really keeping that log as much as I wanted or should have been doing. That was a mistake on my part. But I've been more interested and more in tune as I've gone forward and asking about sleep. How much sleep did you get? How much sleep did you get? What kind of sleep did you get? What time, you know, I'll ask an athlete all the time, what time did you go to bed? So I went to bed about 11. What time did you go to sleep? Well, I went to bed at 11. No. What time you went to bed and what time you go to sleep is totally different. I need to know what time you went to sleep. I think I fell asleep about 12. Okay, so you went to bed at 11, started shutting it down, and then you went to sleep at 12, okay? And what time did you get up? You know, say 6 o'clock. All right, so you got basically 5.5 to 6 hours of sleep. Yeah, I guess, you know. Or, you know, yeah, I have athletes say, I went to bed about 1. I messed around on the phone. I say, I really probably didn't fall asleep till 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had to get up. You know, I was going to be late and miss my bus. I got up at 6:30. You got 3 hours of sleep. Well, that's no good based on recovery, what I'm trying to do for this workout. I mean, again, that's part of rest and regeneration, but and those are things that we try to keep because it's part of, like Coach Turner, logs of what your athletes are doing. So I do keep that. I do have them, and I do have that stuff out there, but a lot of people don't do them. It's interesting to hear that Alan Webb did that, one of the best middle distance people we have out there. He does that. And I would encourage athletes to do that as well. Some of these kids, man, goodness, you can't even get them to do their homework, let alone get them to do keep a log of what they're doing. So you leave it for us to do. But, okay. All right. Wow. All righty. I guess they ain't show up today. Eagles down 27-7. Super Bowl. It's a preseason game. You're going to pay him back in the preseason? Dang. Okay. It is what it is. So I understand. Anyway, I was saying, so recovery logs, like I said, mentioning keeping logs of what they're doing and how you do and what your workouts are and recovery times of your athletes is important to coaches. It's also something that a parent can do as well. If you ask the coach, say, hey, coach, what'd you do today? Well, I did this. How much recovery time you did? I gave him this time. Did he hit his time? Did she hit her times? Yes, she did, or no, she missed it. This is what the time is. And parents can keep it as well. It's something that you can help your athlete with and saying, you know, as you work with your athletes, hey, you know, I gave you the workout today. You had this workout today. Your coach gave you this workout, and they were looking for you to hit these times, and you didn't do it. Why? What happened? And, you know, a kid might tell the parent something different than they tell the coach, but the parent can also understand the part about the sleep because the coach isn't there. So the parent can say, well, you didn't go to sleep. You know, I told you to go to bed at 10 o'clock and you didn't go to bed at 12. You didn't get to rest like your coach has been telling you. Get on it and do what you're supposed to do. You know, so those things, those are logs that parents can be part of as well. Because as a coach standpoint, keep a log. Parents can keep logs. Athletes, like Coach Turner mentioned, Alan Webb, like one of the best out there, he kept his own log. So an athlete can keep a log of their recovery, the workouts, and their sleep. Those things are very important to getting better at what you're doing. You know, if this is something you want to do, you know, going forward from high school into college, something you should be doing. Every athlete should be keeping an eye on their recovery, their workouts, and their sleep. So they have an idea of, they can look at and they can see the trends. And they can even chart it themselves, graph it themselves. Hey, you know, in week one of my work, I got X amount of sleep. This is the workout I did, and this is what I hit. I hit these times. This was a week I didn't have much sleep because I was doing something else. So this was going on. I didn't get much sleep. And this was the times I hit. Here's the things. This is what I need to do. These are the things. Okay, I see my trends. I'm better, you know, when I do this, or I'm not as good when I do that. And they can keep it and see it themselves, and they can craft it for themselves to understand how they fix themselves. You know, my workouts, you know, right before the race, here's the workout, here's what we did, here's what I did, here's what I did at the track that day in the meet. Did it work for me? Or I did it, I had a great one, and didn't do that also. So those things happen. I want to bleed into regeneration real quickly because I saw a study, and Coach Turner, you mentioned too, I saw a study where there are athletes who will get very little sleep one night and hit PRs the very next day. And the reason being, just because of the adrenaline things that's in their body does it, but it's not a long-term thing. And they'll say, well, I can do this all the time. It's not a long-term thing because that's not really what's happening. It's just, Lord have mercy, Tony, really? She's gone. She's not here anymore. She left. You don't have to talk about the skins, Tony. She left. She got me all messed up. She got short sleep, but hit PRs, but it's not something they can hold on forever because it's just one of those things where your body just an adrenaline rush. It's kind of like an adrenaline rush. They got this extra energy that came about because of what's happening, and they maximized what they did on the track that day, but it's not sustainable every single time. So an athlete who thinks, oh, then you get 3 hours of sleep next day, I'm going to be good. It's not sustainable. Your body won't allow that to happen to you. You may have it one time, maybe have it a couple times, but it's not going to be sustainable over the long term. Because your body will adjust and say, no, that was this. We'll get you going there. So keep those things, athletes. Parents, you can help by keeping those types of things. And coaches, you know, that's kind of some of the things we should be doing, keeping our log of what our workouts are, recovery time we date them, how many athletes were part of that workout, who hit the times, and where they are, and graphing where they go forward to do those things and getting better. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, what those things are. It's hard to do it by myself, especially for this long period of time. And since I don't have her to bounce off or anything, and because Tony didn't even want to watch the show anymore because she ain't here, I'm going to go into a little bit more about the European Championships because I think we've covered a lot of it when we talk about recovery. And I think we've covered all the big aspects. Eric, did you have any other questions, Eric? That I can help you with while we're still talking about it, because I really would like to talk about this European Championships and what happened in last week. Some of the things that happened, some of the amazing times ahead. We had a bunch of people go, you know, 1975 and 200 by the Turkish athlete. What's that young man? Young man was I don't know if he's from Sweden or Norway or the Netherlands. Three brothers in the 1500, and the youngest of the brothers, 15 or 16 years old. He's 15 or 16 years old, won the 1500 of the three brothers. And so it's just amazing. I mentioned it, Coach Donna's mentioned as well, truly, that there are athletes right now that many people don't know about, and they're teenagers, 15, 16, 17 years old, who are truly doing fascinating and amazing things on the track, but you don't know about them yet. But you will come 2019, which is the World Championships, and 2020, and the Olympics. again, a lot of people don't focus on the world championships because, you know, it's not the Olympics, because the Olympics is the big hype and talk about, and you have all the other sports that are part of it. But truly, when you want to talk about track and field, the better a meet is in actuality the world championship, because the focus is bringing the best in the world to do the sports that they do, that to do the track events that they do best. It doesn't always happen at the Olympics level, especially for USA. USA, we have one of the toughest trials there is to get to the Olympics. Again, the top three go to Olympics, and we have some of the in deep in so many areas, from the 100, the 200, the 400, the hurdles. It's just so deep that people who are top two in the world, top three in the world, may not be at the Olympics because of what happened in our trials. However, for the world championships, sometimes you get a bye. If you won last time, you get a bye. So that person's already there. So you, now you add, so there may be four people there or five people at the event from our country based on the world championship. So you get the best. You normally get the best of the best at the world championship. Well, it may not be the case every single time at the Olympics. Good example, 2016 in Rio, the women's 100 hurdles, the world record holder, she won the world record at the time, but she was the best in the world at the time. Kenny Harrison didn't make the team. She didn't make the team. Now, after the Olympics, she went and broke the world record. She was the best 100 hurdler in the world, and she truly was still the best 100 hurdler in the world. However, she got to the trials and just didn't have it. Didn't have that best of the day, didn't have that best of the week, and she did not make the team. Isn't that amazing that here is the best in the world? She didn't make the team. She couldn't compete for us at the Olympics because she couldn't make the team. That's how deep it is in the United States in some of the events to just to get to the Olympics. So you don't always have the best of the best. World championships, more than likely you will. You know, less chance Kenny Harrison is not going to be there. She will be there at the world championships. So you get to see the best, and that's why I like the world championships a little bit better than the Olympics, because the focus is the track and field. I get to watch all the track and field. I get to watch all the events as compared to just getting to certain events that primetime television wants me to see. 100, 200, 400, 1500. Those are main things, the track and field that primetime in America puts on there, because, you know, they like the metric mile, the 1500. They like to show that one. 100, because, again, speed, 200, speed, and 400. Those are main things they show. They show the other events, but they don't normally get all the coverage, and they don't get as much of the buildup as compared to those. So when at the World Championships, I'll see the 100, the 200, the 400, the 800. I'll see the 3,000. I'll see the steeplechase, you know, which is a fascinating race. I'll see the race walk if I want to watch. I'll see the marathon. I'll see all of those races that normally I would not get a chance to see, and see the greatness of the sport. When you see a 10,000, you watch in 10,000, you say these guys have been running for 25 laps or more, and there's one lap to go, and you see three guys take off. You're like, they just ran 24 laps. How in the world is this guy going to run again? And he's taking off, and he runs 55 seconds or faster on the last lap. You know, you say, my God, these people can't run 55, right? Just one time. And this guy's already run 24 laps, and he runs the last one in 55 seconds. Just amazing. You get to see, you know, the beauty of the sport and how much it is, how great it is, and all the events out there, not just a few of them. So that's why I like the World Championships a little more. But backtracking to the European Championships, again, just the European Championships, so Sweden, Norway, Germany, Spain, Great Britain, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The European Championships just took place. It's a great championship. However, it didn't have, like I said, it doesn't have North America. So you don't have USA, Mexico. You don't have the Caribbean nations and Jamaica, Barbados, Bahamas, all those things. So you don't have those nations, don't have African nations, don't have Asian nations. But they did have a lot of great performances and a lot of great athletes. Like we mentioned earlier today, Mondo Duplantis, high schooler in America, won the European Championship with a vault of over 19 feet 10 inches. Amazing. Absolutely. Set the American record, 18 years old. 15-year-old won the 1500. I mean, I was talking about there are high school kids doing amazing things who are going to be setting the world on fire just next year. So if you want to watch this sport, take a look at these young kids in the high school level, because they will be leading the sport for the next 10 years. And there's kids coming right behind them. We're doing just, I mean, we literally just watched just few weeks ago, 11, 12-year-old kids, 9, 10-year-old kids run times that, you know, high schoolers 20 years ago probably would not have run. They would probably beat a lot. If they were running, they would beat a lot of high schoolers from 20 years ago, the time they were running at 11 and 12. You know, it's just amazing, absolutely amazing. Some of them not even 11, 12, not 20 years ago. Some of them was 10, kind of even being 5. You know, we got 13-year-old girls running 2:13, 2:10. You know, I mean, it's just amazing to me. You know, 105, 105. I mean, 2:10, at 13 years old, 800 girl. That's amazing. I mean, that time, and just like I said, 25 years ago, ladies were just trying to break 2 minutes. And this young lady's, you know, 20 years, is that 2:10 already? She's that close, she's 13? I mean, just imagine what you're going to see in the next 3 to 5 years, what these kids are going to be doing. So get ready, prepare yourselves, because you're going to be enjoying it. You're going to really enjoy it. You're going to see the sport at its best. Talk about Deena Asher-Smith. She is a young lady from Great Britain. She did something that hadn't been done in over 20 years. She won the 100. She wasn't favored. She won 200. Again, she wasn't favored. And she anchored the 4x1 of Great Britain, which, again, they weren't favored as well. All three. She won all three. She came home with 3 gold medals and just amazing. She's 23 years old. So, I mean, she's not even old. It's not like she's the grand dame. She's 23 as compared to Allyson Felix, who's 32. And I love Allyson Felix. She's one of the best. She's been a great ambassador. But really, these young kids are doing some great things and amazing things, and they're just going to take the sport to another level that I don't think I've ever really thought would happen, but incapable of doing, but they're going to do it. She did it. Her teammate, Matthew Hudson-Smith, don't know what it is about Great Britain. Everybody has a double name, but we're doing it here in America too. He won the 400 in a pretty good time. Carson Warholm did not win the 400 hurdles, did he win the 400? I can't remember. From the Netherlands, he's 22 years old. He was a world champion of 400 hurdles just last year, and he's been getting overlooked because, again, he's a world champion from just last year, 22 years old. He's been overlooked because Samba from Qatar, some people, Qatar, other people say, has run 46.78, second fastest time in the world, you know, and Rye Benjamin, 21. Samba's 22, Rod Benjamin's 20, he ran 47.02, which at the time he ran it was the second fastest time in the world, who had tied the great Edwin Moses. Well, Warholm, who won the world championship last year as a young man, you would think this guy's going to take the sport to another level, got overlooked because these two guys are doing these great things. And the funny part about it, even when what he did at the European Championship still got overshadowed because a teammate, 15 years old, won the 1500, and because Samba, again, couldn't compete because he's not part of European tour, and Benjamin not competing because he's American, weren't there. So no matter what his time was, which was a great time, 47.4, I believe, or 47.2 or 47.4, which was an outstanding time, is overshadowed because Salmon ran 46.98 and Benjamin ran 47.02. I mean, what can you say? I mean, it's just amazing what people are doing. And what's going on? Katrina Johnson Thompson, Nephi Thiemann, were in the heptathlon, who are doing big things in the heptathlon and changing the way people think about the heptathlon based on what these young ladies are doing. Katrina Johnson Thompson ran the fastest 200 ever running in the heptathlon, 2268. She ran 2268, which would be an outstanding time anywhere, but she ran in the heptathlon. And came in second in there, man, because Nephi Thiemann won the whole thing with another outstanding points where she built up on her. But the thing about the two of them is they're changing the dynamic of the heptathlon. It used to be the young ladies in the heptathlon were kind of a little bigger, a little bulkier, you know, they were a little heavier. Well, these two young ladies are tall and thin. Extremely thin, if you really, in all honesty, they're not built like, well, she can't throw the javelin. How's she going to throw a javelin? You know, where's she going to throw a shot based on their size, the way they look? You know, but looks can be deceiving. What they've done is said, hey, I can get multiple points and major points in the high jump. So these two young ladies who were actually world-class high jumpers, both of them, they're world-class high jumpers who are jumping 6'6 and 6'7 in the high jump, were getting monster points in high jump, but also using their speed, their sprint speed in 100, the hurdles, long jump, are building up these multiple points in these events. And then again, running that 200, like I said, 100, not the 100, but the 200, the 100 hurdles and the long jump, in addition to the high jump, getting up these multiple points in these higher points and changing the way we look at the heptathlon. It used to be you get some of the girls who are pretty good in the sprints, but even better in the field events to get you going. Now the thought process has been, hey, can I get these young ladies who are really good in the high jump and with some pretty good speed, I can make them a multi-athlete. I mean, it's changing the dynamic of how coaches are thinking as far as how you look for a multi-athlete on the female side, how you dress what you're looking for on these athletes, and what you're going to do going forward. So watching these chunky young ladies, and Henry says, well, we had Richmond Heat, we had some young ladies, China, India, Damir, who fit that criteria. Then athletes who could do really well based on what they're doing now. So I've been thinking, and I'm wondering, perhaps, maybe Damir switches. She has done the multi. We trained her as a multi-athlete. Will she do that later on at South Carolina because of the way these two young ladies have changed the game as far as it's concerned in the multis? I mean, they're close to setting the world record. Nephi Thiemann actually has the world record. And again, we're talking about thin athletes. If you see them, you say, oh, they're high jumpers. They're, they're built like models because they're just tall and thin. You know, and that's what they are. You wouldn't think of them as multi-athletes, but they are, and they've changed the way it's going. So I believe that in the next 5 years or so, and it's going to be happening now, college coaches are going to be looking for young ladies who are not the typical what it was just 6 years ago, a little heavier, big and heavier, not fat, but just thicker, to go to these thinner, tall athletes who are really good at the high jump and with speed so they can train them on the other things. Just the way things have changed in this sport. I mean, like I said, that would have been unheard of, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Would have been unheard of. The shift has started to happen in the last 3 years with these two young ladies. The shift has begun. And Jessica Ennis won it in 2012, and she wasn't built like these young ladies. Ashton Eaton's wife, not built like these young ladies. But they've changed the game and how you do it and how you go about winning the multis for them. Will it change for the men? You don't know, because it's never been a as much as people think there's a type for the decathlon, the decathlon, it really hasn't been one. Ashton Eaton was different from Daley Thomas, who was different from Bruce Jenner, who was different from Rafer Johnson. I mean, they're all different. They're built differently. They're all different from Dan O'Brien. Everybody's built a little bit differently in how they do it. So the men's decathlon can go across the board. There's not really one true body type that's been a part of it. Other than the most part, it's been speed. A lot of it has been speed. A lot of the kids are based on speed. But they're still tall decathletes, sprinter decathletes, bulkier, heavier decathletes, But, Ashton Eaton can change the game because of his just absolute raw speed and how good he was hurling. And he was just across the board one of the best of all time in the Maltese and how he changed it. But, that's what's going on. They're mentioning it. I just wanted to mention the European Championships and those people because of the things that's going on. And because we did talk about recovery, and it's really difficult to talk about recovery without having Donna to bounce it off, because she had a lot of things that she wanted to talk about as well as far as recovery is concerned. We're coming up to the close of the show. I want to thank you all for watching, listening, and being a part of our show. Like I said, because we're a niche thing, we don't, we don't have debates about, sport, the other sports, MJ versus LeBron, who's better, the Steelers, the Packers, the Cowboys, and all that stuff. Ours is a niche sport. You really got to love it. We love it. We're passionate for it. It is everything that we want, and we just thankful for all of you guys watching us and enjoying what we do. Next week, we'll be back. She'll be back for the whole time next week, so a lot of you will be happy. We're going to talk about part three of our series about regeneration, the last part of track and field, the last part of the things we're talking about, regeneration. When the workout's over, what are athletes should be doing after that? What should they do when you've done the entire workout, everything done? What is the regeneration? What is it? Is it always, do you have ice baths? Or is it just sleep? Is it other things you do? What is your meal right after your workout? All those things. We'll talk about those things next week. So thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Like I said, we enjoyed being out here. We enjoy our show. We enjoy having you around. And we will see you next week. And we're going to go out with one of my favorites from Aretha. Good night, everybody.